Hello, and welcome to Introducing Me. I'm your host, Sarah. I started this podcast to get to know other people and lifestyles while discovering more about myself. Each episode, I will give a new guest a chance to discuss their background, culture, interests, or whatever they want to talk about to help increase all of our own worldviews. Today, I'll be introducing you to Bree, who's here to talk about her life as she's been growing up and what she is doing currently. Bree recently graduated from Susquehanna University, which is where I went to school and now work. She was actually the first student worker that I was able to hire, and she's an absolute delight to work with, and I'm super excited for her to be here today. So Bree, thank you so much, and why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, hi, thank you, Sarah. Like Sarah said, my name is Bree, and I'm a recent graduate from Susquehanna University. Shortly after finishing my last semester, I moved to Charlotte, North Carolina. I currently work here as a nanny, and I also have a second job teaching English to children that live in China. And I recently started my own small business called Bee Cherry Co. I currently create stickers and design other graphics for my Instagram page, and hopefully we'll move on to even bigger things soon.
That's super exciting. What got you interested in starting your own small business?
To be honest, TikTok. I spent a disgusting amount of time on TikTok the first couple months during quarantine, and I somehow landed on sticker TikTok, and I thought it was the coolest thing ever, and I was like, I can do that. Like, that looks so easy. It's not easy, but I love it, so it's fine.
Hey, I mean, as long as you love doing it, I think that's all that matters. I only recently downloaded TikTok and am trying not to get sucked in, but I might have to check out sticker TikTok.
It's real. It's even sticker TikTok, small business TikTok. It's just amazing. And like, I mean, some of the people that start these things, they're like 16 and they're doing amazing. And so it's really easy to get inspired, and also just a really supportive community. So.
Cool. Well, that's super awesome. So why don't you give us a little bit what it was like growing up? What was your household like? Who did you live with? And we'll start from there.
Okay, so I was born and raised in Fairfax, Virginia. So that's right outside of Washington, D.C. And I grew up with my mom and my dad in the household. I have two half siblings, but they are so much older than me. My brother and I are a 19-year age difference. And my sister and I want to say, are like 29-year age difference. So I did not have them. I don't really have a relationship with my sister just because we're just so far apart in age. My brother, I did get very lucky with him, and we did grow up pretty close despite our age difference. So getting to see him was kind of a treat. So even though it was just my dad and my mom and I in our household, my family was kind of interesting and I guess different for a lot of people, because my brother's mom, I call her Mama Scylla, she's like my second mom. And I know a lot of people think, oh, when a family gets divorced, that family's not really like, you know, like that mom would be different and away from the rest of the family. But I grew up having her come to Thanksgiving and Christmas and going and spending time with her and like literally just being sent to her house and to visit her. And I think that's different for a lot of people. And I definitely had people commenting on it growing up, but for me, it was normal. So don't know what to say about that. But
yeah, I mean, I think that's really cool. And it definitely is different. You had a maternal figure that wasn't related to you, and you already had two parents. So it's really cool that you were able to have that experience with your brother's mom. What were people making, like the people making those comments, were they rude? Were they nice? Or was it just kind of out of curiosity?
I think it was mostly out of curiosity and just confusion. People just didn't understand how the dynamic worked, which then I was confused because I didn't understand why it wouldn't work. Because, you know, that's all I knew, so.
Yeah, that makes sense. When you're younger, it's kind of, this is what I know. There's nothing wrong with that. So I think that's good. Now, what was it like growing up in Fairfax? I personally don't know much about it. I know that DC is obviously very diverse and there's a lot of different people because it's a huge cultural hub. Does that bleed into Fairfax?
For sure. I didn't really realize until I went to Susquehanna, how diverse the area I grew up in was. Again, I just assumed that was normal. So like I had friends that were Turkish and Lebanese and Chinese and Nigerian and like really any nationality under the sun you could think of. And I grew up going to their houses and eating their food and kind of just like being a part of their different cultural celebrations and things like that. So that definitely is a big aspect of growing up in the DC area. Another big aspect too is, you know, DC itself has a lot of money. And so that bleeds out into the surrounding Northern Virginia, Maryland area. And again, did not realize that until I went to college, because I grew up in an area where I was like, oh yeah, like everyone has like a lake house or a beach house or a boat or whatever. Like this is just like normal. And like, you know, some people don't, but like, it's just like, it's normal. This is what happens here. No, absolutely not. Not everywhere is upper middle class. And I think that was a nice little reality check for me when I did move away.
Yeah, definitely. So were there not, and like, were there not any other students that you were growing up with who were lower in the poverty line? Or like, did you go to a private school?
So I went to public school. There were definitely students lower than that. But our schools, one, are huge. So I grew up going to, our schools have what they call a pyramid program. So, you know, a chunk of elementary schools go to the same middle school and the chunk of middle schools go to the same high school. And so the pyramid school that I went to, at one point after middle school, a lot of my friends and I ended up going to different high schools. So that is possible in pyramid schools. It doesn't happen too much, but I kind of stayed with similar friend groups, if that makes sense. So a lot of my friends, they were still upper middle class. And there were definitely other students that were lower in the poverty line in my school. But because we had like 2,700 kids and you kind of just stayed within your group or at least similar groups to your groups, I didn't associate with them as much.
That makes sense. There's nothing wrong with that. I had no idea that the school would be that large, but it definitely makes sense. Like you're not going to know everybody.
Yeah. And I guess I should also back up though, because not everyone, even in my friend group, had that kind of privilege, but they definitely had it way more than other parts of the country. So like maybe they don't have a boat or like a beach house or whatever, but like their family more than likely is going on vacation at least a few times a year, or like they're going to a bunch of concerts, or like they're constantly going out to eat, or like they're getting a car, or like whatever the case may be. So like the privilege, I guess, was definitely like spent, if that makes sense, in different ways, or like people had different sorts of privilege, but it was all like on the same line, level of privilege.
Yeah, that makes sense. Did you find then that by going to Susquehanna, your wealth situation was difficult to talk about?
I think it depended who I was talking to. It was definitely uncomfortable at times, just because like I can say like I didn't end up taking out student loans. So especially recently when people are like, student debt, oh Brie, like this was student debt, and I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like I literally have no idea. And you know, it definitely gets uncomfortable having to talk about that with people, because I don't want people to be like, oh, like, look at you, like, you have this, that, and this. I'm like, okay, like, I'm very blessed. I'm very lucky. Like, I'm forever thankful that that was my experience. But it's difficult. It's, like, it's not difficult in the way that, like, it, you know, it's a different kind of difficult, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Whenever you hear that someone isn't taking out student loans at all, there's definitely a big divide.
Yeah.
It's definitely hard. But it's also just a place of fortune. And as long as you're grateful for that, which you very much are, then it's okay. Mm-hmm. So kind of switching gears a little bit, I happen to know that you are biracial. So do you want to talk about that? Because I'm guessing that it also has a similar sort of background with, you know, all the people that you were around in the diversity. And then Susquehanna is a mostly white school. There is diversity, but it's not similar to what you were talking about with living in Fairfax.
Yeah. So I guess growing up in Fairfax, you know, if I try to think back to it, I don't think I really knew that many biracial people. But it kind of didn't matter where I was, just because there were so many different racial groups there that like nobody really commented on it or cared about it even, I guess. You know, like there were definitely microaggressions that I faced growing up. And I remember one of the ones from probably like elementary or middle school that is stuck into my head the most was this one girl that I went to school with didn't understand why I didn't wash my hair every day. And I had to explain to her that that's not healthy for my hair to wash it every day, and that I will completely destroy it if I do that. Because most biracial people that I know wash their hair about once or twice a week. And that's just kind of how we have our hair wash days. That's just how it is. And she kind of tried to make me feel disgusting because I didn't wash my hair every day, which is just ridiculous, because just because I don't wash my hair every day doesn't mean I don't shower. Like, I have a haircut. I don't understand that. So that one has stuck into my head. I also remember, you know, people kind of being like, oh, you shouldn't hang out with them. Like, you're too white to hang out with them. Or, oh, Brie, you're too black to like go like and do this or do that. Like, you can't be doing that. Or like even the comments of people being like, oh, like you're like an Oreo. You're like an inside out Oreo, like all this kind of stuff. And it's like, I don't think people were saying that to be particularly mean, but also I don't want to be related to it as a cookie. Like, I just, it's just very interesting stuff, I guess. But, you know, that was just kind of, as I was growing up, I didn't really realize how much those would affect me, I guess. Whereas when I got to college and I kind of, you know, I came onto this campus, like you said, it's a predominantly white campus. I think that's when I became very aware of my race. And, you know, so a month before I graduated high school, my dad ended up passing away. And so my dad was my black family member. So he was my black figure I had in the house, my mom white, my dad black. So with all of that, I felt like I had almost in a way lost an aspect of my blackness. And then coming to this new predominantly white campus and, you know, dealing with all of this on the one hand and then coming to terms with like who I am racially, it was very, very hard. And I struggled with it a lot. And I feel like I struggled with it a lot more than I necessarily needed to, just because of comments that other people would say, or the fact that, you know, and I talked with people at the school this, and the school is aware, like there's not enough resources for biracial students on campus. And that's something that they are working on. So just if I had had that kind of support group, I feel like I could have gotten through a lot of what I was feeling in a better way.
Yeah, that makes sense. I do know that Susquehanna has a lot of different groups for people of different backgrounds, but it's definitely when the predominant background is white and you don't want to pigeonhole everyone who looks like everyone else into these similar groups. How do you do that with it being comfortable? And there's definitely been a lot more conversations on campus, even just since you graduated a few months ago. Now, one of the interesting things about college is, unless you're like posting pictures of yourself everywhere, people don't necessarily know who your parents are. So when you came to college, were people aware that you had a black dad who had just passed and a white mom, or was it not something that you necessarily were talking about?
So when I first accepted my spot at Susquehanna, I was like trying to figure out how I could make friends without like actually knowing anyone, because I knew absolutely no one when I decided to go to Susquehanna. I ended up joining the GroupMe page that they had for class of 2020, and through that I ended up making a friend who's actually one of my best friends. I moved down to Charlotte partially because of her, and so I've met her, well, through GroupMe met her, and then she told me about her other friends. I got placed in a group chat. Basically, that was how I made my first friends at Susquehanna. And so they all knew because they were following me on social media. Like, I was talking to them every day. So that group, like, they knew who my dad was. They were able to talk to me about it and, like, kind of be like, well, you know, like, we're here for you when you get to Susquehanna. Like, we know it's gonna be hard, but we're, like, happy you're still coming and all of that. But definitely, like, you know, when I got to the campus, I think people could tell I wasn't just white. Like, I'm definitely, I have lighter skin than a lot of biracial kids, but, like, I have other features that show that I'm biracial. So, like, I have very much the biracial hair with, like, the curls and the just volume and it frizz and everything. Like, my nose, I often point out, like, you can kind of tell from that, or, like, my eye colors, you can tell from that. So it's, like, almost one of those things where, like, at least for me being biracial, people a lot of times are like, oh, like, what are you? Which I don't mind. I really don't care if someone asks what I am, because I'll tell them. I would almost rather they ask than just, because not that it's bad, but I oftentimes people think I'm Latina. I don't know any Spanish, and people try to come up to me and speak to me in Spanish. Like, this literally happened to me last week. So, like, I, once people got to know me a little bit better, they would learn about my dad. A lot of times, like with you, I'd kind of just, like, drop it into a sentence and they'd be like, whoa, like, what are you talking about? Or, like, some of my friends, like, they would have known me for, like, a year and I would have brought it up and they'd be like, what are you talking about? Like, when did this happen? Or at least, like, they would know, but they wouldn't know when it happened. So, like, one time I actually sat down with my friends and I was like, yeah, this happened less than a year ago. And they were like, girl, like, are you good? Like, what's so, yeah.
That's the anonymity of college and not having everyone around you know every little detail about you.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that, you know, losing your dad was kind of like losing this Black part of you. Did you have any extended family that you were able to lean on, or were you kind of then more like that? It's been a handful of years since you graduated high school. Are you now more associated with your mom's family, or are you still able to experience that life a bit?
So I kind of had an interesting, a lot of stuff happened after my dad passed away. Like, it wasn't like that was it. And then, like, life kind of, like, moved on. So, you know, my brother and his wife were with us for a while, and then he got stationed out in Hawaii. He's in the Navy. So he was moved out to Hawaii, I think, not even like a full year later. So I had that I was dealing with. And like my brother's mom, who I'm really close with, she lives in a completely different state. So, like, you know, she had to go home. So you would assume that I would get closer with my mom's side of the family. So right, like a year or so before this happened, a lot of the oldest members of my mom's side of the family all passed away like around the same time. And so the family was already kind of in a little bit of chaos. And then after my dad, it was like everything exploded and I did not talk to family members for like months and months. There's one that I was really close with, I haven't talked with, I think, since she came down for my dad's funeral, because she just has kind of like distanced herself from the whole family. And because of all that, you know, our family on that side is completely kind of like crumbled in a sense. And then with my dad's side of the family, I was never as close with them as I was with my mom's side. So it definitely was a little bit like I haven't gotten as close to them, I think, as I could have. However, in the spring of 2019, my dad, when he finally got his spot at Arlington National Cemetery, a bunch of his family obviously came to celebrate that with us. And I feel like that was the first time that I got to experience that side of my family. And like truly, like I'm not a child anymore. Like I was 21. So like I got to go to drink with them and stuff and like actually hear all the stories. And like, I figured out like my family's really cool. Like my dad's sister owned a jazz club in Atlanta at one point. Like, okay, didn't know that. And now she teaches eighth grade science in New Jersey, like complete whatever, turn around. Or like my, who's it? My brother's mom again, my mom Estilla, she was the first Black woman to go to her high school. So she integrated that high school in South Carolina and like so incredibly strong, like one of the cool, and I always knew she was cool, but like those kind of stories. And like, I realized, you know, like I'm a generation away from y'all. And like I share the same blood as y'all. So like, I feel like that was me kind of being able to claim a little bit of that Blackness back. And just realize that like, this is my family. And even though I don't always look like it, or I don't sound how people think that I need to sound, or like, you know, I'm not hanging out with the people that I think people think that I need to hang out with. Like, that doesn't make my family's history any less amazing and important than it is.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And it's fortunate that you had that long amount of time to kind of, you know, turmoil, to sit and settle, but then to be able to come back and to be able to hear those stories and know that, hey, we're going to be okay. And there's all this history that now that you're an adult, you can actually learn about. So your brother's mom was actually, you said, you know, she was the first person in her school. It's crazy for me to think, as you said, only one generation above you. It's not something we read about it in textbooks when we were growing up, but it's not actually that long ago. Has that kind of affected you in any way, realizing, hey, these things that I read in history textbooks are actually really close to my family?
Yeah, I think, you know, kind of like this past spring when Black Lives Matter kind of, you know, they've always been there, but I feel like they kind of suddenly got more media attention and people started getting more involved once again. I think I was when it was all happening, I was very emotional about it all happening. And, you know, my mom's white. And so where she grew up in central Pennsylvania, so like around where we went to school. And so as much as she doesn't mean, you know, to like say anything insensitive or anything, she just doesn't understand sometimes. And like, she's more than happy to learn. She just doesn't understand, like, why are you so emotional about this? And like, I had to tell her, I was like, you know, like, that's our family. Like, they fought for so much of this stuff so that me, my brother, like our generations after us wouldn't have to. And like the fact that we're still having to, especially at the time, like now when we're living through a pandemic, and like, I personally was not comfortable going to anything. And it's like, you know, for a while I was very upset because I was like, I don't know what to do. Like, my family has done all these amazing things and like they've been fighting and like it's my turn to do it, but like I'm too afraid to leave my house right now. Like, my brother's mom, her mom, there was a massacre in their hometown and she was like a head nurse, or like it was like the highest thing a Black woman could be at the time in the hospital. And as this massacre was happening, she was driving in and out and in and out, just grabbing whoever she could, throwing them in her car and driving them to a hospital and coming back. And I'm like, I have that to live up to. Like, are you kidding me? Like, what am I gonna, and you know, I realize now, like, there's so many more things have to happen rather than just marching. Like, we need those people to donate. We need people to be educating other people and learning more themselves. And like, that's what I ended up doing. And, you know, just trying to like learn as much as I could about the situation. And then sometimes having really uncomfortable conversations with my friends and my family, but I'm so proud of myself for doing that. And I know my family members are really proud of me for doing it. So.
Yeah, that's definitely a good place to be. Those conversations are definitely difficult to have. And I know a lot of people who have been doing them and talk about how difficult they are. And I know people who are like, I can't even get through to them. Like, it, so to hear that your mom may not understand and may not know why, but is willing to learn and continue to be educated, that's a really good thing. Now, you mentioned that you didn't, like, when everything was happening with Black Lives Matter right at the beginning, you didn't want to leave your apartment. Was that because of the pandemic specifically, or was it also just because of everything else?
It was, I mean, I'm not a big fan of crowds to begin with. But it was mostly the pandemic. Like, I have asthma, I have anxiety. Like, I was not, I mean, when the pandemic was first happening, like, I didn't want to go to the grocery store. Like, I was in my house for probably like a month straight, just absolutely terrified. So yeah, I was, even when I knew things were getting better at that point, cause I was like, what, May, June? I still was like, no, like I said, I'm in Charlotte. So I'm not in uptown Charlotte where the protests were happening, but I was like, I just got to drive like 20 minutes and I'm there. So like, no, we're just gonna stay inside, stay as far away as I can. Like, I don't want to be around people. Or even today, I was walking through Walmart trying to get my groceries, and, you know, there's someone in there without a mask, and I'm like holding my breath every time I'm walking past him. So
yeah, that's completely understandable. I wanted to make sure like that clarity was there. So obviously with this pandemic and everything, and we've obviously said that you were recently graduated. What has it been like being a 2020 grad of college?
It's been terrifying and confusing. You know, like, I feel like I was talking with you earlier. I'm like, I'm probably going to go to grad school in like Paris or something now. But also like that could change within like the next 2 hours. And I could be like, now I'm going to move to Oklahoma. It's just like, oh my gosh, it's nice because I'm not tied down to anything right now. And so I kind of feel like this is a gap year for me. I mean, like, it's a gap year in the South. It's not like a cool gap year. But nonetheless, I guess it's kind of a gap year where I'm able to kind of figure out what it is that I want to do. Because, you know, if it wasn't for this year, I would have probably gone into a communications job, since that's what I majored in. And I'm now at the point where I'm like, ooh, public relations, I don't want to do that. Like, that's my degree and I don't want to do that at all. Like, I want to do marketing instead. And so I'm like, I should probably get like a business background, at least like take some LinkedIn learning classes, which I am, like, I'm doing LinkedIn learning courses. But it's been a dumpster fire of an experience.
That's okay. It's 2020, the dumpster fire year. That's kind of what we're all going through. Now, you mentioned that you don't speak Spanish, and you just mentioned possibly studying in Paris. What is so interesting about Paris?
So I've studied French for 9 years, and my background for studying French, or like the reason I wanted to do it, is kind of interesting. At least I think it is. So I went to summer camp for 8 years in West Virginia. And I know this is kind of like, why is this connected? Because it's West Virginia. But that school was run by, I think he was Scottish, a Scottish man. And for some reason, this camp was like huge in Europe. So like we would have counselors from all over the world. Like we'd have British, Scottish, Irish, French, Spanish, Italian, Australia, New Zealand. Like we had Chinese counselors for a couple years, like really cool. And so a lot of the kids that would come were from France. And I remember I got really close with a couple of these French campers. And I remember one, her name was Chloe. And I loved Chloe. She was one of my like favorite camp friends. I called her my Frenchie. And I remember there was one point when we were kids and I was like, Chloe, like you always talk to me in English. You sound so cool when you speak French. Like one day I'm going to speak French and I'm going to come visit you in France. And she was like, oh, yeah, okay, so whatever you say, Brie. And so in eighth grade, when we could finally take a foreign language, I signed up for French. I was horrible at it when I first signed up for it. I'm still not the best, but like I can have conversations. Like I have published work, it's fine. But I was not good when I started. It was kind of like a what am I doing sort of situation. But then I would think of Chloe and I was like, okay, like I'm going to keep up with it. And so when I got to high school, my one French teacher that I had 3 of the 4 years that I was there, she lived in Paris for, I think it was like 18 years. Like her 3 daughters were born there, grew up, and they finally came back to the US at one point. And so she would have these cultural exchange programs with other schools in France. And so I ended up going on those trips twice. The first time my dad just like surprised me and signed me up. And I was like, okay, like I guess I'm going to France. And because I was just kind of, he was really big on me traveling. And it's kind of the reason I'm so into traveling now. And then the second time I was like, oh no, I gotta go back. Like, this is so cool. I have to go back. And so the second time I went back, I went to this, we stayed in this area outside of this town called Chantilly. So it was supposed to be really cool because my school was Chantilly High School in Chantilly, Virginia. And so we were going to Chantilly or Chantilly, France. So it was like Chantilly to Chantilly, ha, cool thing. But the really cool thing about Chantilly is it's right by Paris. And so at this point, I hadn't talked to Chloe in a couple years, and I reached out to her on Facebook and I was like, hey, like, I know this is really weird, but like, I'm going to be in France in a couple weeks. Like, do you want to try to meet up? And she was like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad you reached out. Yes, I do. And so I ended up, you know, my host family was amazing. I loved them to death. And I asked my host sister, I said, you know, like, would it be okay if, since we're only a couple minutes from Chantilly, could we go there, meet up with my friend? And she was like, oh my gosh, yes. Like, we'll get lunch. It'll be great. Like, I'm so excited. And so her mom was kind enough to drive us to the train station. And I remember just like the feeling of being able to finally see my friend after however many years and being like, I told you I would be here. And like at that point, I wasn't that good at French, but I was able to say a couple words to her. And I was like, I told you I would make this happen. Like, this is the coolest experience ever. And just like the fact that I was able to follow through on that one. And I mean, I was like probably 12 when I made that like decision. And however many years later, be able to do that. And now I'm 22 and like, I'm still able to speak French and like, I absolutely love France. Like, I think it's one of the most beautiful countries. I think the language is beautiful. The food is amazing. Like, the shopping is amazing. But yeah, so I guess at this point, because I've had that experience, I think it'd be really cool to kind of like go back and take it a step further. And maybe, you know, even if I don't see Chloe again, at least my host family, like, I would love to be able to see them again. And even the first host family I was with as well, they were also amazing. So even being able to travel down to Lyon and see them down there would be awesome. So.
That's super exciting. When you started telling the story, I was like, has she gone back and seen Chloe? Is this going to be a reality? Did she make it happen? So like the fact that you did, it's just like so heartwarming. And, you know, like you said, when you're little, you make these promises that you don't follow through on. So, and that was a big, big one.
Yeah.
Now, Susquehanna does require a Global Opportunities cultural experience. What did you do for that?
So this is also like, I kind of have to explain this one because it did not go the way that I thought it was going to. So, you know, as soon as I got to Susquehanna, I was in the communications program and I was in the French program. And I was only a French minor. And, you know, for languages at that school, they're not a huge thing. And so the professors are constantly trying to like be like, you would be really good if you majored in this, like, do you want to try to do that instead? And so if I wanted to major in French, I would have had to go to France for a full semester. And at first I did want to go somewhere for a full semester, but I did not want to go to France. I was like, I've been there, I've done that, it's not happening. Like, I'm going somewhere I've never been before. And so my heart was set in Australia. Like, from the time I found out about it, I was like, I'm going to Australia. My best friend was like, yeah, I'm going with you. And so we applied to the Australia program. We both got in. And then out of the blue, I decided to transfer. Why? I don't really know. I was kind of mad at some people. And I may have been a little overdramatic. And I decided, you know, well, it wasn't just because I was mad at people, but it was definitely part of it. And so I decided to transfer. Yeah, awesome school that I transferred to, Florida Southern College. Really awesome, really fun. I met really cool people, just wasn't for me. You know, I had already experienced Susquehanna. I had already fallen in love with Susquehanna. And I was like, after a full semester, time for me to go back. I'm not doing this anymore. And so I get back. Everyone thought I was on a go trip. Cause they were like, how was your go trip? And I was like, what are you talking about? I was in Florida. Like, you can go to Florida for your go trip? What? and then I had to explain to them that I was just really dramatic and decided to leave for a semester. But when I got back, it was at the point where I really couldn't go long anymore. You know, if I wanted to, but that would have been my first semester senior year and I wasn't doing that. So my options that were left were go your own way or go short. And so I was like, all right, I guess I'm going short at this point. And so, you know, a lot of the go short trips, I feel like, are to Europe. And I was like, oh, I don't want to go to Europe. Like, I can go anywhere else. Like, or I can go to Europe any other time. Like, Europe's just like, I feel like a way easier place to go to than a lot of these other countries. And So at first I was like, all right, I guess I'll just try for Australia again. Like, why not? I know there's an Australian one. I think there's like a New Zealand one. So I'll just try for those, whatever. And I knew that those would be harder to get into though, because you know, the popular trips, those are really competitive to get into. And so I was like, you know what? Like, they accepted me once, I can get accepted again. It's fine. So I go to the website to apply and I see that there's a new trip that I hadn't seen, and it was Go Morocco. And so, you know, at this point I had been studying French for I think it was like 7 years at that point. And so I knew what the Francophone world consisted of, and I knew Morocco was a Francophone country. So I looked into it, and without even like, I probably only glanced at the page. I was like, this is where I'm going. This is where I'm applying to. I'm going to Morocco. That's so cool. I want to go to Africa. Like, no one goes to Africa. And so I applied. I was freaking out because I thought it was gonna be hard to get into. And I got in. I was like, wow, this is so cool. Apparently, like, no one wanted to go to Morocco because it was the first year the program was being run. And so we were the guinea pig group to go. In the end, I'm pretty sure most of us ended up going, liked it a lot. You know, of course, there's a couple people. It's very different than if you're going to like England or Greece. Like, it's not strictly a vacation go program as some of these kind of, I mean, like, we're not going on a yacht. Like, we're not, I'm sorry. But it was absolutely, I think, the most amazing place I've been to in my life. I don't know how people in other places are going to top that, just because I wasn't expecting to love it as much as I did. And I wasn't expecting to be able to use my French as much as I did. And, you know, everywhere we went, like, we had translators, like, it was fine. But I remember one time even we were buying like water and juice at this like street vendor. And I felt so important because I had to translate orange juice because the vendor did not understand what orange juice was. And I was like, sir, juice d'orange. And I felt like I was so cool. But I mean, it was cool. It wasn't just like if I'd gone to France or Belgium or whatever, or Canada. Like, you know, it was a interesting experience. And it showed me as well that my French was a lot better than I thought that it was, because I was very questionable before then. But once we got there and I was like reading signs in French, I was like, oh, I have been studying this for 7 years. I do know what this says.
Yeah, that's really awesome that you kind of ended up just falling into a country that ended up having French, and to hear everything that went into that. So a Go Short is, for those who don't know, Susquehanna University is a shorter program that is not a full semester. That's kind of the difference. So it would have been just a couple weeks that you were there.
I was there for almost the whole month of June. So it was one of the longer programs.
Okay. Yeah. I did a Go Long. I was gone for an entire semester. So I only somewhat know what other people go through when they don't do it for the whole semester. And some of the programs, as you mentioned, are a bit more relaxed and vacation style, more that like you're seeing more of the touristy things while also experiencing the culture. So yeah. What your program, what specifically did you have, like a thing that you had to do, or like a class that you were taking, or what was the like main purpose?
So something that was really different with our program than other ones were we didn't stay in like a couple cities. We toured almost the entire country. So it was like every couple of days we were packing up and going somewhere else and packing up and going somewhere else, which, to be honest, I really liked, because we got to see a bunch of different climates. I mean, like, we saw the beach, we saw the mountains. And I mean, like, the mountains where it snows in Morocco, which, like, I feel like people don't know happens there. I mean, like, it was like 40 degrees in the morning sometimes. And then our bodies went into shock a little bit because we were having like a 40 degree morning. And that afternoon we drove to the desert and it was 100 degrees with no AC or anything. And like, we were all dying. But we got to stay in really cool places. It was mostly, we were learning about the culture of the country and how every region really has their own differences in the culture. So at one point we stayed at a university, the only English speaking, like, American university in Morocco. And so that was in the region where the king lives. So it's beautiful, pristine. The grass is so green, like, just absolutely gorgeous. And then after that, you know, we're staying in the deserts. We're staying in Akasba, which is an old Moroccan, like, fortified village and like a super old house with no AC, no light. So I mean, like, we're using candles to walk around that night, like, you know, we're trying to save our phone battery for the next bus ride because we're like, we're gonna need something on this 5-hour bus ride. So just learning about the different cultures, the different languages spoken there. I mean, I think we spent a little bit of time focusing on water and like how important it is ecologically for the country of Morocco and how they're getting very close to going into this like really, really bad drought within like the next 10 years. And just, it wasn't like one specific focus. It was very broad, but it was very informative and very interesting. But we also had like our vacation time. I mean, we threw a fit, so we got a vacation time. Like, it was one point when we were in the desert and we were like, we can't do this anymore. Like, we don't want to be outside when it's 2 p.m. Like, we want to go to the pool. And so they had to let us go to a pool because who wants 14, 20, 21, 22 year olds like throwing a fit? So yeah, we got to have our pool time. One time we even convinced them to take us to McDonald's. Like, it was a good time.
Yeah, that definitely sounds like a lot of fun and definitely sounds like an experience that hopefully, that I don't know if the school is still doing it or not, but it's definitely being a first group doing something new. That's kind of cool.
I actually saw, I went back onto the school system and I saw that they were doing their list for Go short programs for summer 2021. And Morocco was on there, and I was very excited because that means, hopefully, fingers crossed, another group gets to go and they get to experience it. And, you know, the professors that ran it, amazing. I had some very interesting situations in terms of just, like, people in my group saying racially insensitive comments to me. And the two professors that were there handled it in the most amazing way. Like, I didn't even want to tell the one professor because I thought that he was going to, like, he kind of scared me sometimes. And so I didn't know how he was going to be. I have never felt more supported about something like that in my life than from him. So I, you know, anyone that was ever thinking about that kind of program, like, I tell everyone, like, go on Go Morocco. Like, it is the best trip that you could possibly ever go on.
Yeah, that's really cool. I know I would definitely struggle to be in a country where I might not be able to read the signs and do different things, but it sounds like your experience was really good and that the professors really supported you, which is what's really important on those sort of trips. So before we wrap things up here, I think we've come to a bit of a natural close on everything. But I want to ask you a really off-the-walls, fun question that's completely different, unrelated to everything that we have talked about. And the question I have chosen for you today, because we are currently recording at the beginning of the fall season, is what is your favorite season and why?
Okay, this is so easy. My favorite season is fall because it's the best weather. Like, my hair actually stops frizzing in fall. So there's that. Also, sweaters, hello. The colors, hello, the pumpkins and apples and cinnamon and Thanksgiving. So yeah, no, I love fall. Like, it's actually kind of disgusting. As soon as Memorial Day hit, all my fall decorations were up. Or not Memorial Day, Labor Day.
I was going to say, I'm like, you started decorating for fall in May. That is a little bit early.
No, Labor Day. I always get those mixed up. All my decorations were up. I actually had someone comment on it and be like, you do like fall. So yeah, if I could live in fall year round, I would.
There's nothing wrong with that. Now, is it different? I must ask, because Virginia versus Pennsylvania versus North Carolina, are you still loving fall even though you are now even farther south?
So I think I'm loving fall even more right now because it was so hot and so humid in North Carolina that now that we're like 70s, 60s, I'm like, oh, this is beautiful. This is perfect. And like the kid I nanny, I have to go outside with him every day. And it's like, I don't want to sit in like 95 degree heat with him. I'd much rather sit in 70 degree heat and like, you know, bring a little jacket, go like, it's fun. It's a lot, it's better that way. Least favorite time of the year. winter and summer, snow is horrible. I don't know how to drive in it. In summer, again, hair frizzes. Don't like that. I can only pay so much money for keratin treatments and things like that.
Oh, gosh. Well, hopefully, North Carolina, you won't see as much snow and you won't have to worry about that. And you've already made it through summer. So,
yeah, the only thing with snow here is whenever there's a snowflake, everyone freaks out. And I am the exact same way because where I grew up in Virginia, we don't know how to handle snow. I mean, like, there were some years to get like 2 feet of snow. We were out for 2+ weeks. Like, we did not know what to do. So here, now that I'm an adult and I have to go to work, I don't know how to drive to someone's house in the snow. I don't care if it's just a snowflake. I don't know what to do. Like, I didn't learn that. So I'm not looking forward to it.
Yeah. Oh, do you still have the car you had in college? It's not a snow car.
I got rid of the Fiat.
Okay.
Part of it was because, you know, I was so terrified to drive that car in the snow. I have a Honda CR-V now. So, like, the ultimate mom car. But still, I don't know how to drive in the snow even with that. Like, I don't know what the difference is. Like, no matter what, I can't even walk in the snow. I can't even walk when it rains. Like, I have to wear special shoes when it rains because otherwise I'm just sliding everywhere.
Oh gosh. I think you'll be okay. The CR-V should be able to handle it. Because you're a nanny, you know, the parents should be able to handle your situations. And I will say, was it last Thanksgiving? Really bad weather, or maybe mm-hmm. 2 Thanksgivings ago. I ended up staying at a coworker's house because I did not drive home. So people understand you will learn. You will learn your limits of when it is too not, like, when it is really bad and you shouldn't be driving. And you'll be okay. I believe in you.
I will say it's interesting though, because I'm not good at driving with snow, but after living in Florida for like however many months, 7+ months that I was there, I'm really good at driving when it's like pouring rain. And I mean, to the point where like every other car will be like pulling over and I'm like, I got this. I made it through a Florida summer. I can do this. So you would think that some of those things would come into play. Apparently not in my head.
Well, I hope it gets better. I hope you don't have to experience any crazy snowstorms.
Thank you.
That you'll be good. All right. Well, I think that then brings us to a close. I've had a great time talking to you, Bree. So thank you so much. If you, the listener, would like to connect with the podcast on social media, all of the links are in the description, including the podcast email, Instagram, Facebook, and Patreon page if you do want to support the podcast. Also in the description is Bree's Instagram for her shop page. So she does have that page on Etsy that she mentioned earlier, where she sells super cute stickers, including some great fall ones for her favorite season. So thank you, Bree, so much for spending time with me today. And to my listeners, thank you for taking the time out of your day to hear a new story. Until next time, bye.
Bye.